Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Mainland Podcast is back. Hi, everybody. Michael Citro here for themainland.com, the presenter of this particular podcast. Joining me is Andrew Harrison, one of our senior columnists. Andrew, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. It's been a while since we did this, but we have plenty to get through, so I'm excited to get started.
Yeah, that's right. This is our you know, our monthly off-season schedule. There's not really a need to do one weekly. There's not enough news coming out, generally speaking, to do one every week in the off season. So we do these monthly. This is our December edition, and very, very excited to have Orlando Pride head coach Tom Sormani as our guest coming up in just a bit. If you're just joining us, you'll definitely want to stick around for that. Andrew, since we last spoke, quite a bit of news out of Orlando City, and most of it in the form of saying goodbye to people. You know, we've got some players that are options were not picked up. We've got GM Paul McDonough, and just as of today, the day that we're recording this, Ian Fuller, assistant coach, has been let go. And I guess I'm going to start this podcast, which is episode 37. Going to start this one off talking a little bit about the players that Orlando City has opted not to bring back. Of course, the big name on that list is Tally Hall, starting goalkeeper. Of course, he suffered a knee injury late in the season. It was a meniscus problem, not thought to be serious, but obviously at his age and having knee problems in back-to-back years, maybe, and at his cost, maybe the club deciding to go another way. Several other veterans not re-signed or not brought back. Lewis Neal, Eric Avila, Danny Mwanga, defender Corey Ash, goalkeeper Josh Ford, youngster Cindy Rivera, who never really quite got going, and Adam Bedell, who was picked up during the summer transfer window, loaned out, and then basically let go. So basically throwing away a draft pick for that one. We'll talk a little bit about Paul McDonough, but I think that the Adam Bedell thing is probably tied to the McDonough decision. And I want to just get your thoughts on these guys that were not brought back. Any surprises there?
I'm actually going to say I wasn't really truly surprised with any of them. I think, you know, you kind of covered some of them. Some of them were purely money-based decisions. Some of them were completely performance-based decisions. Tally, I'm going to say, wasn't that much of a surprise for me. I did have that initial wow, you know, earth-shaking moment, but then I realized, you know, two knee injuries, this one non-contact on turf with a high salary cap, just didn't make sense. And also you have to remember Earl Edwards Jr. has come along a lot better than I think people were expecting. So that's a good, solid performance from the team and having the ability to spot talent at a young age. Mwanga was obviously not a surprise. Ford wasn't really a surprise. It spent most of the season on loan in Fort Lauderdale with the NASL. Cassio, same thing. Injury problem, just not happening. Avila and Ash, I mean, I think we kind of knew that Ash was on his way. He didn't travel to Brazil. We also knew that he had really high salary cap. Avila was potentially the one surprise for me, especially with them letting Lewis Neal go. I thought that he had a good team fit for the guys. Maybe he's off the field, but then could play that sub role in those fresh legs when you need him for those final 25, 30 minutes of the game. Otherwise, I mean, I feel like we're building a team that allows us to grow forward and grow, not stay in a team that doesn't make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I was a little surprised by Tally Hall just because I think Earl Edwards Jr. acquitted himself well in U.S. Open Cup play and in friendlies, but there wasn't a trust level enough to give him games in MLS. And that told me that maybe they didn't think he was quite ready. And for now to suddenly say, yeah, he's ready, we're going to get rid of Tally Hall and maybe bring in a veteran that can either compete for the number one job or be the backup, tells me something completely different entirely.
Yeah. And I think, just to expand on that, and then we've also seen McMath go and Dan Kennedy from Dallas, two people that we could have easily picked up four pretty low numbers against the salary cap, and those guys have come off the market pretty quickly early on in the offseason. So I think it is interesting that hopefully the club does have a plan for that veteran guy.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Kennedy's cap hit was off the top of my head, but I thought he was a little bit expensive last year. But anyway, Tally Hall is going to be playing his trade elsewhere, also getting rid of Josh Ford. That's not a surprise. Josh has been, you know, a guy who's had trouble to get MLS games and wouldn't have gotten any this year if not for an injury to Hall late in the season. It would seem that Earl Edwards Jr. and as yet to be named veteran will probably battle for that number one spot. Of course, we've reported on the Benfica system player who came in, Thierry Graca, who played in the Brazil friendly. Probably will be announced in the winter window as a signing, and I'm not sure what they do with him because they have some young goalkeepers they can stick over at Orlando City B. But maybe he gets games there. Maybe he alternates with young Mason Staduhar. I'm a little bit surprised Lewis Neal was not brought back. I mean, his cap number is a little high. Maybe they decided they would not pick up the option and try to re-sign him at a cheaper rate, but as of 11 o'clock today, the day to re-sign your own players has passed. And then there was some talk that possibly he was in talks with coming back to the team in another capacity, potentially as a coach, maybe at Orlando City B. Or maybe, based on what happened today with Ian Fuller, as an assistant coach with Orlando City. And that's why Eric Avila wasn't a surprise to me, because I thought Lewis Neal would be back. No surprise, Danny Mwanga. He could not even get in the 18 when there wasn't enough healthy bodies to even have an 18 yeah. Sometimes. Sidney Rivera, like I said, couldn't even get USL games. Adam Bedell is a little bit of a surprise since it looked like the team wanted to try to turn him over, like get him some exposure over in Scandinavia and sell him. That's obviously either they couldn't find a buyer or they just decided to cut their losses there. And Corey Ash, again, a little expensive for his age, and team can go in different directions there. Tony Cascio, also another player who won't be back. He's out of contract. Not a surprise. They're talking about him having one of those types of injuries that, you know, basically forces an early retirement. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the options that were exercised. Earl Edwards Jr., we talked about him. Team is also bringing back Luke Bowden and Seb Hines. Midfielders Servando Carrasco, Darwin Serin, Kevin Molino, and Harrison Heath, and forward Pedro Ribeiro. Are you surprised by any of those coming back?
I'm going to say no. I mean, I think when we look at the core of those guys, you know, Bowden had a great first MLS season, and I think he is really one of those core guys, even though we talk about people like Fuller and Neal moving on. Hines, I'm really excited. I think that kind of locks up our three guys at center back, so we've got some coverage. We can move some people around. Hopefully we won't have the 2016 injury hit season that we did this season. Carrasco, obviously not. Of course, they were going to pick him up with the Pride signings that occurred. Seren, I think he really showed that they wanted to lock him down because he's a player for the future. Molino didn't really get a fair shake in 2015 due to such a bad injury early on. They really mm-hmm. want to see how that relationship with Kakar can continue to develop and maybe make Kakar even better player than he was this season. Harrison Heath, not a shock. I think I'm going to see him a lot of spend the time in OCB, but he wanted to have that MLS contract so that they can move him back and forth. Ribeiro, I guess he's my biggest surprise. I'm not too sure he did enough to warrant a new contract, but they like the Brazilian guys, and he had that part to play, and when we needed him, he came up big, and he changed games for us. So if it's a low number, it makes sense, but time will tell whether or not it was the right decision.
Yeah, he wasn't making a ton of money, and if he's one of your last guys on your bench, I think that's a pretty strong team. If you, you know, if you can have a Pedro Ribeiro on the bench that maybe struggles to get into that 18, not – you don't want him to be the guy starting or the first replacement, first option. You want him to be a depth guy. And so if they can make that happen, it'll be a pretty nice roster. But it remains to be seen who's going to take the place of those that have departed. We do know that already under contract for 2016, Aurelian Collin will be back. Connor Donovan, David Mateos, Breck Shea, Tommy Redding, Tyler Turner, and Rafael Ramos. Kaká, of course, Chris Nagita, Estrella, Adrian Vinter, Carlos Rivas, Brian Rochez, and Kyle Larin. And I actually spoke to Tommy Redding's dad today, but I didn't talk to him under the guise of that this was going to be for the show. So although he said some interesting things to me and I enjoyed our conversation very much, I'm not going to be able to get into those details. But it was pretty good. It was basically Tommy's, I guess the clean version is Tommy's very excited about the 2016 season and what his role will be with the club. So let's move on to GM Paul McDonough. I think when they brought in Chief Soccer Officer Armando Carnero, the writing was on the wall. Paul McDonough was going to be on the way out. Looked at it as a demotion, as he probably should have. And today was announced he will be the director over at Atlanta United FC. What do you think of this move, both from a club perspective and from a Paul McDonough perspective?
From a club perspective, I'm actually probably going to go against the grain here a little bit and say that this is probably a good decision. McDonough was a starter franchise guy. I think that was proven with the Atlanta United announcement today. He is a guy who can come in with almost a blank slate, really, in terms of MLS for Orlando City, and give that knowledge that is needed for the super draft, the expansion draft, and have that wealth of knowledge available. Whether or not he's the same kind of guy as a Garth Lager way for, you know, Real Salt Lake and Seattle Sounders, I'm not too sure that was the guy we needed going forward. We have to continue to grow people from the academy. We have to continue to identify foreign talent, and I think that picking up Carnero from an arena like Benfica, that is one of the greatest supported clubs in the world, that has a really outstanding academy, this makes sense from a club perspective. And the flip side of that is McDonough already has a new job. He obviously knew that that was going to happen. Maybe the club should have done a better job with linking up those two announcements so that it seemed a little bit less, oh my God, he's gone, let's all panic, let's develop a problem with our supporters. I think this is a good decision. I think this is a good, strong future-building decision before McDonough gets too entrenched and before people to see that we're willing to make changes. We've gone through our first season. We've reviewed people's roles and responsibilities and what they can do, and we're getting a good change for 2016 and the growth that we need to have.
Yeah, I thought overall Paul McDonough did a fine job as GM of Orlando City. He put together a team that was competitive all year that could have made the playoffs had it stayed healthy. He went and got the pieces necessary during the summer window when we saw where the deficits were on the team. And filled those holes with Adrian Vinter and David Mateos and guys like that. Brought in a Corey Ash. I think that he wasn't infallible. I've seen a lot of, well, not a lot. I guess I've seen some fans on Twitter that were pretty up in arms about, you know, him leaving and being forced out in their view. But I think there were areas that we could have done better. And one of those areas I thought was the expansion draft. I think you look at the players from that expansion draft that are still on the team.
Yeah.
if you can find them, and that tells you a lot right there about, you know, what the, you know, city was able to get out of that expansion draft. And I think that there were players there that could have been more useful than what we selected. And you know, again, you know, we don't know what backdoor trades or agreements were in place for, don't take this guy and we'll help you out with something else down the road. And some of those favors, you know, we may never know what they are, and some of them may never happen now that McDonough's gone. But that was an area I felt like that the club could have done better under Paul McDonough. But he did a, you know, I would say, you know, if I were rating his performance to this point, I think he was certainly a good solid B. I thought he did a fine job for Orlando City.
I think that your comment about the expansion draft is actually, you know, kind of what MLS highlighted a few months ago, is that they're thinking about getting rid of the expansion draft. It's because, you know, we can say that he was able to bring in some people, but we know that times have certainly changed and those people are pretty much moving on. And I think that really goes down to the quality and the mechanism of the expansion draft over McDonough. And like you say, it's a non-transparent way of acquiring players, so we don't know what happened, but I think you have to give him props for being the guy who almost made it to the playoffs in his first season.
Mm-hmm. And there were some good moves in there too. They took Jahlil Anibaba in the expansion draft, used him as part of the deal to get Aurelien Collin, and as you know, Sporting Kansas City did not pick up the option on Anibaba, so you know, that was a piece that we weren't going to probably get a lot of mileage out of anyway, so that was a good move. And, it, you know, there were good moves and bad moves. I mean, you know, in the long run, I guess you could say Sean St. Ledger was a bad move, maybe. There was, you know, certainly some guys that came in and didn't get done, like, you know, Paulo Andre. So there were some stumbles, but I think, you know, overall, like I said, a good solid B. And, you know, maybe he was, again, maybe the Adam Bedell thing, you know, since they were turning the page on Paul McDonough, maybe they decided to turn the page on Adam Bedell and just, you know, start fresh there and open up that spot. Let's turn our attention to Ian Fuller, assistant coach, longtime player coach in Orlando with the USL side, right-hand man to Adrian Heath. By all accounts, a good man, well-liked by the players. Reason to panic, getting rid of an assistant coach?
No. I mean, assistant coaches disappear from teams all of the time. Okay, yes, you look at the big teams in the EPL, they've had the same assistant coach for forever, but it's not who's behind the coach. It is the head coach that ultimately makes all the decisions. The coaching staff are a part of that. But we do have Mark Watson, who has a lot of MLS experience, both as a head coach, as an assistant coach. I think the biggest surprise for me with the fact that Fuller was pretty much a player manager from about 2012 onwards with Orlando City is that he's not transitioning to Orlando City B. Feel like his experience in the league as a player, as well as a player coach, would have been really helpful for this franchise, especially in its new season, and with a brand new head coach in Anthony Pulis. It doesn't give me a moment to panic. I think this is, once again, another one of those moves where we don't know what goes behind on closed doors. We don't get to see every single training session. This may just be something that Heath and Canero and the entire front office decided was a good move, and it was a good move heading into the next set of mechanisms for acquiring players.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it, not knowing what's going on behind the scenes, and, you know, there shouldn't be a transparency with this, where this is concerned. It's club business, yep. And they should handle it the way that they see fit. And we don't know. You know, maybe they said, we'd like to maybe bring in somebody else and have you go to Orlando City B, and maybe, you know, maybe Fuller didn't want to do that. Maybe they decided they wanted to bring in somebody else, but they didn't want to transition Fuller so as not to undermine Anthony Pulis. That could have been a consideration as well. I wouldn't read anything into this as this being this big bad Benfica guy coming in and cleaning house. In my experience in professional sports, general managers don't come in and tinker with the assistant coaches. If they come in and want to make a change, they just go right to it and replace the head coach. So my thought is that this was probably a group decision. We don't know what it's based on. We're not necessarily, entitled to that yep. explanation. This is their deal. It's not a public company, so this is their deal, and they'll run it how they see fit. In the long run, I don't think it's a huge reason to get upset, no matter how well liked Ian Fuller is. It's, you know, I think about the assistant coaches around the MLS, and I go, how many can I actually name? You know, yep. not a whole lot. so it's not, to me, it's a minor move. It is a talking point because Ian Fuller has been with the club so long, but, you know, the club needs to do what it has to do to move forward. And if they feel this is the right move to make to get better, then that's what they should do. And again, maybe that spot goes to Lewis Neal starting this year. We don't know. We don't know who they're going to bring in, but obviously until we know who that replacement is, we won't know what we're trading for, whether it's a trade up or a trade down or just a lateral move.
And I think that, you know, a lot of people want to say, well, you know, this is all Canero's doing. It's not. This is a team that, and a front office that does everything in a coordinated way. This isn't one guy making an oligarchy in the Orlando City front office. This is calculated decisions based on the next stage and what we saw from this year. This is all evidence-based. Everything we've ever done, the Jamie Watson transfer in the Brian Burke situation, you know, all of those things were based on decisions from everything that happened throughout the year, injuries, performance levels. This is just another stage in that. And you also have to remember that before this, other than coaching Orlando City in the USL, he had no other coaching experience. This mm-hmm. is something where we're now serious. We're now talking about a lot more money and a lot more player identity. I mean, we've just seen the growth of MLS. It's now time to potentially get real and to bring in people that know the game inside out. And I'm not saying he didn't know that, but you have to have that potential level of coaching experience that comes from also having 5-10 years elsewhere. I mean, we saw mm-hmm. that with Samani coming in as the head coach of the Pride, a guy who has 30 years worth of managerial experience, seems to make sense. And we don't know if, you know, Canero could have had a chance in being a part of that. Everything that they do, I think, is very good and very structured. And it hasn't once caused me to panic or be upset with the moves that this team is making.
Fair enough. And you said the magic word for the segue, Tom Sermani. So why don't we bring in this month's special guest? All right, we're very happy this particular episode of the Mainland Podcast to welcome to the program none other than Orlando Pride head coach Tom Sermani. Tom, how's it going?
It's going really well, yeah. I mean, I think the only downside at the minute is you kind of feel that you're sitting on your hands, you know, desperate to get started and get the team up and running and get out on the soccer field and work with players. But outside of that, things are moving along really, really well.
That's great. I'm really happy to have you on. I've got so many questions for you, but I wanted to start with, you know, the team building process in and of itself. I mean, you've been a part of building several teams across different layers of soccer. What is it? What is the difference, and what are the inherent specific, unique challenges when it comes to building an expansion NWSL side?
Well, it's probably a little bit more complex than any other team building process, in a sense. Firstly, from the fact that you're obviously starting from scratch, I've got absolutely no players whatsoever, and no sort of feeder system to actually bring players in. So that's the major complexity, and also that you're dealing in a marketplace that isn't. A free marketplace. I think the US is unique in soccer and other sports in the sense that they have the draft system and that clubs still retain players' rights even when out of contract. So things in the US and putting a new team together here is a little bit more complex than it perhaps would be in any other part of the world.
So let me ask you, Tom, then, what brought you back to club soccer with all those complexities, especially in the U.S. system? What enticed you to become the head coach for the Orlando Pride, especially during its expansion season?
Oh, the excitement of doing that, because the actual chance of, even though you've got restrictions and constraints, the actual opportunity to put a team together and put your stamp in a team and to start something from scratch is quite unique, and it's something that's quite exciting. So that was the first attraction to the job. The second attraction was that it was Orlando City, and you know, I had met Phil before when I was a US women's national coach, and had an insight to what this club is about, and in many ways it's a, you know, it's probably one of the best club environments that you could ever hope to work in. And it's an ambitious club. It wants to do well, and the women's team is a very important part of it. So when you put you put those things together, then that was a great attraction. Also, that it's been some time since I've been in club soccer, and it's good to get back there again. You know, I've never, if you look at my sort of CV and my career, I've actually, you know, done a multitude of different kinds of jobs, you know, different cultural environments and likes of Japan, etc. Men's soccer, women's soccer, youth soccer, competitive soccer, international soccer. So, you know, that the actual, you know, for me, I don't like to kind of pigeonhole myself in one particular either type of job. So, you know, it's all about the job for me, and I love the variety in that sense. So coming to Orlando was a great opportunity, and one that I couldn't turn down. And, you know, as I say, starting a new club is exciting, and in many ways, you know, I was involved just after the start of the WUSA back in the early 2000s, and also with the Australian national team, when I came back into that job at the beginning of 2005, we had actually moved from Oceania into Asia, and that needed a whole different set of planning, different types of players, and different program put in place entirely. So I've had some experience in sort of, if you like, starting up programs or starting up teams.
Tom, you've got a wealth of experience at the international level. You know, the Australian, U.S. and Canadian national teams, and that's given you a very good look at players all over the world. And that's come into play recently with two new defenders for the Pride, Steph Catley from Australia and Monica out of Brazil. What can you tell Pride fans about these two new players and what they bring to the squad?
Well, I think, firstly, Monica, you know, it's like it's about bringing good players to the team. And, you know, there are very few bad Brazilian players. You know, the great thing, and the great thing that they bring to the game is almost a men's understanding of how to play soccer. And so we get that with Monica. I think we'll get someone, a player who really wants to do well, who has probably floated around a little bit and needs somewhere to come to really fulfill her potential. And I think Orlando can provide that for her. You know, very good defender and a very good soccer player. Steph Catley, for me, Steph Catley is one of the best left-backs in the world. Yeah, I brought her into the Australian national team, I think it was just after the 2011 World Cup. You know, as a 17, 18-year-old. And just right away, her impact in the team was almost instantaneous. She has, you know, superb athletic ability. She gets forward. She can defend, obviously left-sided. And so she brings that energy, that skill set, and also got a great character. So, and I had a fantastic season at Portland last year. I think I was funny enough. I'm back in the UK at the moment, and I caught up with Mark Parsons, the new coach up at Portland, at Heathrow the other day. He was flying out, and I went over to catch up with him. and he's saying he's taken a lot of stick amongst the supporters at Portland because they've lost Steph Catley. So I'm really delighted about that.
Well, and we know you have specific sets of tactics, and we're starting to see a roster being put together. What kind of football do we expect to see in this expansion season from the people that we've got right now, and what you are going to tactically put out there for the field going forward? And can we expect to see an exciting game of football that Orlando City fans are used to?
Very much so. I mean, there's no point in coming to a club like this if you're going to play a kind of football that you want to try not to lose a game as opposed to trying to win a game. And, you know, I think if you look historically at my kind of philosophy and track record, I've always been about trying to build teams that go out and play a brand of football that is about winning games, not about, you know, trying to stifle games or stifle players. And we want to play an expansive brand of soccer. And I think you have limitations to the players that you could sign, but I think when you look at some of the players that we've got, Leanne Sanderson, Sarah Hagen, Alex Morgan, three outstanding international attacking players. When you look at Steph Catley, hopefully I'm not speaking out of turn here, you've got to be careful in the US of what you say and what you can't say, but hopefully we're getting a Canadian player who will be an equivalent to Steph Catley on the right-hand side and have really two, you know, dynamic attacking players on the flanks. So, you know, we're a team that wants to go out there, make an impact, win games, and entertain the fans at Orlando City, because that's what they want.
Yeah, sure do. Coach, you know, you touched on the international players, and I wanted to, you know, kind of get your thoughts on the strategy in getting the best players available and still covering, you know, the team when those international breaks come.
It's a balance. I mean, and it's a bit of a risk one way or another. You know, what you know, when we talked about what we want to do, we thought, well, do you really want to compromise a team? You know, next year's an Olympic year, so that's always going to be difficult. And it's probably going to be difficult for all of the teams. So I think what we essentially want to do is try and put the best team together that we can. Then when it comes to times where we're losing players to international games, then we just need to work a little bit harder. I just need to do my job a little bit better. And we need to trust the other players that we've signed. And I think that's important because it is a squad game. And it's important that we don't just rely on, you know, the so-called name players or the international players. But we've also, you know, I think when you look at the core of some of the players that we've signed domestically, I think those are players that we can really develop and who'll go in and do well whenever they're required to go in and do well. So, you know, I think the key thing is to try and get the best team we can get for Orlando City. And then when the international, you know, games and breaks come along, we worry about that at that time.
You also talked about earlier on about trying to develop people. Have you been happy with the structure that Orlando City is setting up? We have got a very good youth academy that is helping develop the game. Are you excited to be a part of helping generate the next level of Orlando Pride players for the city and the league in general?
Very much so. You know, I've never been, I think if you're the head coach of a club, you're not just in charge of one team. You're in charge of the whole structure in relation to women's football in this club. You know, and I see part of my job is being involved with the youth team and the youth setup. The unfortunate thing in the US, that's probably the wrong expression. The different thing in the US compared to any other country in the world, again, is that you have a college system where, you know, you can develop your players to 17, 18, but then particularly in female soccer at this stage in its development, the players are going to go to college, so you're going to lose them for 4 years. So it's unfortunately you can't actually take the structure all the way through from, you know, whenever you start under whatever it is, 10, 9s, 8s, take it all the way through and then develop players that come straight into your first team. Hopefully in time, and if the women games women's league continues to develop. Hopefully that might happen like it does in the MLS. So you're not going to quite get that continuity. However, I think it's a very important part of the job for us to develop players in our youth academy. And then hopefully they'll go to college and then come back to us.
You know, Tom, on the men's side, Orlando City head coach Adrian Heath is well known for favoring his 4-2-3-1 formation. Do you have a preferred formation and tactical style?
No, I honestly don't. I mean, I've always been, I think there's, simplistically, there's kind of two kinds of coaches. One that has a particular system of play. I'm probably more of a coach that has a philosophical way of playing and then work the system and the structure into that way of playing. And that's often dependent on the players you have at the time. So I think for me, what we'll be doing is we'll be looking at the players we have, the strengths that we have, and then decide whether we play like 4-2, you know, 1-3 or 4-4-2 or whatever within the players that we've got, and then develop that style of play. And I think, you know, to be honest, you have a style of play, but any time you watch a modern day game, you know, the 4-2-1-3 can turn into a 4-5-1, can turn into a 4-3-3, can turn into a 4-4-2. So, you know, I think it's about putting your general structure in place and then being able to work that and your philosophy all together so that the system doesn't need to be so defined in one particular way or another.
And kind of to get a little bit of an expansion on that, what do you think are some of the biggest differences between men and women's soccer? Obviously, we're going to have a lot of people who are new to women's soccer this year, and especially following the Pride. What do you think they need to watch out for between the men's and the women's game?
I think the first difference is obviously the tempo of play isn't as quick in the women's game. But there are some, you know, there are some subtle differences between it. In general, I mean, I've got a philosophy now, and the elite level in women's football is that your expectations of a player on the soccer field are exactly the same. You know, how you want to play, how you expect him to play, etc. The women's game's probably not quite as sophisticated as the men's game, but there's some advantages to that in the sense that, you know, the men's game at times becomes so sophisticated that teams cancel each other out and it can become a little bit, you know, tied down tactically and drab. The women's game has still got that kind of honesty and freshness about it, that players actually go out there and really have a go. And I think that's a huge asset of the women's game. You know, and in many ways, female players are a lot tougher than the male players. It's very rare in a women's game that you actually see a player going down, and if she does go down, you know that she's actually hurt and is actually injured. So there's a greater honesty about the women's game. There's a greater honest competitiveness about it. But it probably just does, at times, lack a little bit of the sophistication at the men's game, the stage that the men's game's reached now.
Tom, before we let you go, get your final thoughts on how many more players you're going to be looking for and how many you think you can get in the college draft.
Well, if, you know, we've just about completed a few deals that will bring us up to 17 of our 20 players, and then we've still got one international spot left. So we're pretty much, we've done, you know, Paul O'Donnell Paul McDonnell has helped me big time and helped me get a roster together that we are really, really happy with. So we're getting close, and then, you know, with a couple of players that we'll bring in the pre-season and then look through the college draft, then we should fill our roster quite easily. So as I say, it's just putting the finishing touches to the squad, because I'm really, really happy with the players that we've actually got in place at the moment.
Orlando Pride head coach Tom Sermonti, it's been just a delight having you. Really, really appreciate your time, and we hope to have you on again in the future.
Be a pleasure. Anytime. Thank you.
Well, Andrew Harrison, that just about does it for podcast episode 37, presented by themainland.com. I really want to thank Orlando Pride head coach Tom Sormani for giving us some of his valuable time. He is over in the UK as we recorded that, and it's a lot later over there than it was here. So we appreciate him. You know, great interview. Really happy to have him on. Very personable, and I just really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was great to be able to talk to him, and I think we got a little bit of an insight into what Pride is going to be playing next year, and potentially even an insight into a new signing, hopefully.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting from here on out. Very exciting, as this podcast is going to land around the time we find out whether or not Orlando City picked anybody in the second phase of the reentry draft. We've got the Super Draft coming up, and we've got the Pride's college draft coming up, the NWSL college draft coming up. A lot of more off-season dealings, wheelings and dealings to happen. We're going to probably find out who that new assistant coach is going to be by the next time we record one of these in January. And it's been a very exciting off-season so far, as they always are, and we'll have plenty to talk about next month. Andrew, what are you most looking forward to the rest of this off-season?
I'm excited about the Super Draft. I think that there's some great talent out there. I feel like if I was to really look at it, we've already given up a lot of our picks for this draft, but there is some good talent out there, and it will be interesting to see, especially with a new guy running the front office, the kind of wheeling and dealing that potentially gets done. But I think I'm actually excited about the stuff that we don't yet know about. I think the team has a lot of stuff in the works that are outside of the regular Super Draft and just general trade window. I think the targeted allocation money could make it a very exciting offseason for somebody that we haven't yet even considered as being an acquisition for Orlando City.
Yeah, I'm looking forward mainly to see if this team adds a designated player in the transfer window. That, to me, is going to be the most exciting part of the offseason, is finding out where those players come from now that we've got a new basically a general manager. They call him the chief soccer officer, but it'll be interesting to see what talent he can pull in. When we get together next month, there's so much to talk about. There'll be the Florida Cup. Obviously, that will be taking place in January. There's teams from all over the world coming to Orlando to play. We're going to have coverage of that at the mainland. Very excited about what's going on at themainland.com. We've got a bunch of new writers that brought on board November, December. We're going to have people dedicated to covering Orlando Pride, covering Orlando City B, and we've also added Daniel Bird, who has been doing tremendous coverage for us on the U.S. men's and women's national teams. He's going to continue to do that. We might bring in a second person to help with that. And, you know, just very excited about what's going on at the site. We hope that you, those that listen to the Mainland podcast, we hope you're reading our stories at themainland.com and following us on Twitter at the Mainland. That's M-A-N-E, not M-A-I-N. And, you know, we will be back in January, and we're going to hopefully have a whole lot of exciting new players to talk about. And we'll try to have another awesome guest, because it's going to be hard to top Tom Sormani, because the man has been a legend in coaching circles for quite some time. He's been head coach of multiple national teams and also was an assistant with Canada as well. So it was great to have his expertise here on the Mainland podcast. Very excited about that. Andrew, any final thoughts before we let our listeners go until January?
Hopefully Orlando City fans get what they want for Christmas. And if it's a player, then that would be great. If it's something else, well, that's fine too.
Yeah, I was looking back last year around this time to see what sort of transpired. And it was around this time last year that Carlos Rivas was announced, that Breck Shea was announced, and couple of other signings. So this is a good time of year to head into, with the winter window opening up, and we're going to be here to cover it all for you. So we will be back in January with the next Mainland podcast off-season extravaganza. So on behalf of Andrew Harrison, our entire Mainland staff, I am Michael Citro saying go City.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom? Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.